Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Real Conversations About Aging Parents. This is your podcast host, Rebecca Tapia. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am excited to have you back. You know where we're going to start, right? So I am still looking for some more reviews on Apple Podcasts. So until I get to my goal of 100 reviews, I am going to sprinkle in lots of very stupid jokes. So my stupid joke for today is, why don't scientists trust atoms? And the answer is because they make up everything. Yeah, there you go. So those will keep coming. Please do go over and take some time to leave a review. Please do share the podcast. So today we have another exciting, could be boring, but I think exciting topic. And I think it helps kind of frame a lot of the questions that we go through in our podcast conversations. And that's going to be talking about life expectancy. And part of this is there's a lot of uncertainty about your own life or somebody else's life. And part of that just is the length of life itself. And of course, nobody sitting here at any given moment can predict the length of any given life. But that said, there are averages and statistics and people that make a living out of studying this. And it's an academic field and it impacts policy. It impacts global health. It impacts costs, all sorts of things. And it changes over time. So it's a fairly interesting statistic to look at. But if we look at just in general, very early humans lived into their 30s. And we are in a time where humans are living longer and longer than ever. And what caught my attention, I was actually at a conference for home design, for aging in place design. And I remember one of the presenters saying, you know, we really should be building homes to serve people who live into their 120s. That will be the new life expectancy in the next couple of generations. And for some reason, it just struck into my brain as I had never even heard it put that way. I thought 120-year-old was like Guinness Book of World Records. But as you're seeing, there's lots of upgrades and changes in medicine with regard to management of cancer, with management of obesity. And if we can solve obesity, then we take away a lot of the chronic conditions that can cause shortened lifespan, such as diabetes or high blood pressure, those types of things. So anyway, we're in a time where I don't know that even for people living today that we know exactly how long they're going to live. I think with the advent of technology plus AI plus medicine plus interest, that we may get ahead of ourselves and help our bodies live longer than we can functionally or quality-wise live. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast episode. But for today, I want to talk about what are some of the variables in life expectancy? What are the things that will influence that over time? And you can look in two different ways. You can just look globally and say certain areas of the world have longer or shorter life expectancies. Or you could even just look individually, like within your own family, and consider that. And I just like dissecting these types of topics because there's so much to get into. And let's just start globally about what are some of the best known influences of life expectancy, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper. So the first one is just the idea of health access. And this is access to healthcare. So you can go, you can imagine parts of the world where there's limited or zero access to healthcare, and then other parts of the world that have maybe overkill, like fantastic access to incredible amounts of care. Now, the United States is known for having a large amount of access to very expensive care, not necessarily highest value in care. But that said, that's probably one of the largest factors in looking at regionally, both across the world in poorer countries versus richer countries, and then within our own country, looking at areas that are poorer versus richer and understanding what kind of access to healthcare they have. So can they see a physician who can diagnose something ahead of time before it becomes a problem? Or if they do have a problem crop up, are they going to have easy access to a team that can help them? Or if they are dependent on something like dialysis, is this something that's available in their community? Or do they have to try to take a 2-hour ambulance ride both ways, which is going to impact that person's access to dialysis? So first and foremost, and I'm not going to go in a very specific order, but just a big one is just health inequality in general. Another way way that you can think about health inequities is to go even within the population and look at male versus female or different ethnic groups or different socioeconomic groups. And there's a lot of literature just in the last 10 years, it's exploded, really helping people understand what some of the determinants are of how long somebody will live. Another one that I would say is very closely related and tied in is just socioeconomic factors. So does somebody have the money or whatever else means you might need to access healthcare or things that would help them live longer, such as education or community resources, those types of things. So if you have somebody who's constantly working, juggling two different jobs the majority of their adult life, and they're not able to go and get basic medical or dental care, or really even be in touch with what might be happening with themselves symptom-wise, then the socioeconomic factors can really come home and shorten somebody's lifespan. And I think this makes sense when you think about just how much time and how much effort it takes to access the clinical care, and especially if you have a chronic condition that requires you to be seen at some certain interval. That can be really challenging. That can be really difficult. So just like I said, kind of a part B, I would guess, of healthcare access are the socioeconomic factors. And you do see that impact worldwide and also in our own country, even within our communities, how you can stratify life expectancies kind of based on both healthcare access and socioeconomic factors. Another one, and these are all, of course, this is how humans live, right? None of these are distinct necessarily from each other. They all kind of work together. The next one is nutrition and lifestyle. And so there's been lots of talk about food deserts, or whether or not do poorer communities have poorer access to foods that promote longevity, whole foods, fruits, vegetables, lean meats, those types of things. And obviously, if you go into poorer communities that don't have access to fresh groceries, and there's a lot of fast food places or a lot of convenience stores, those types of things, then just their even access to be able to buy food that would help their body live longer is limited. And beyond the food and nutrition side, you're also looking at just clean water, which is an issue in parts of the United States, or enough water, or water worth drinking, water that looks drinkable. And what is the access to that? Because when you don't have access to good, easy access, clean drinking water, then a lot of that will get replaced with anti-nutritional entities such as sodas and energy drinks and those types of things that are more readily accessible and identifiable as clean because they're theoretically in a bottle or something like that. But nutrition can be another thing that will help stratify life expectancy. Another one, and we've talked about this a couple of times on the podcast, is just lifestyle. And part of that's nutrition, but a lot of that's also just activity, social engagement. In the course of talking to so many patients in my career, I remember this one person that he was in his late 70s, and told me he goes dancing 4 or 5 nights a week to support his scuba diving habit. And I thought, I don't know that I've ever met somebody in their late 70s that's dancing 4 days a week and going scuba diving on the weekends. And he explained to me that the dancing helps him to keep his core and his legs really strong. And also he gets to meet a lot of people, he mentioned to me, and he's single. But then also when he goes to scuba dive and he needs relying a lot on his core strength and his legs, then it all kind of plays into each other. And you look at various lifestyles of sort of the model of really intensive, stressful work and burnout, or is somebody have some sort of lifestyle that allows for gardening and ladies' nights and things that are really promoting connection and rest. And so when you look at any given lifestyle, I kind of break it down into your activity level, your occupation, and then your social engagement. And so your general physical activity level are people that are able to participate more consistently in higher levels of activity, whether that's because they have a job that allows them to do so or a body that allows them to do so, versus occupation. Are they part of something that's very toxic and life shortening, if you will? Or is this something that they feel a calling for, or however they describe it, or that you feel engaged with? There's a mission or there's some sort of purpose associated with it. And that can be also part of lifestyle. And then I think just engagement in your community. And so people that are very active in community settings, whether it's a religious community or maybe it's a book club or a community at a gym or something like that, that sense of community also can promote longer lifespans. And then we look at environmental factors, and that's just access to clean air. That's access to environmental conditions that are conducive to living a longer period of time. So if you have a house that's falling down around you and very unsafe to live in, or just from a falls perspective, we talked about falls before, a house that's not promoting longevity, which is my other passion that I talk sometimes about, just how home design is interplaying with successful aging and a higher quality of life. But environmental factors are a big one. So anyway, just to recap, we have access to healthcare. There are socioeconomic factors, nutrition factors, lifestyle factors, and environmental factors that can play a role in determining what any given person or region is as far as life expectancy. So what is life expectancy in the United States? Does anybody know? Well, there's no audience, right? Sorry. that's the professor side of me talking. Let's take a look at this. So the last data available is 2021, and the life expectancy for males in the United States was 76 years old, and for females was 81 years old. And actually, what an interesting factoid is that between 2020 and 2021, there was the largest ever single year decline in life expectancy. And I'm sure you can guess what happened between 2020 and 2021 that might have caused that. Of course, that's the COVID-19 pandemic. And we actually lost 1.5 years off of life expectancy. And that was the largest drop dating back all the way to World War II. And this is a side note, but there are people in my life through familial connections that I think persist in their COVID denying, which I can't even imagine. I'm admitting this, but anyway, they are not sure COVID really existed, or maybe it was all a hoax. And when you look at really big data sets, like just how fast people are dying, and to have that one statistic, which of course we didn't know about at the time, but to lose a year and a half out of a whole entire population of, I don't know, a third of a billion people, that is an incredible, incredible statistical change, and so indicative of the horrors that COVID-19 brought, not only to our country, obviously, but all across the world. So anyway, outside of that, those are the average life expectancies. But as we've already talked about, there's actually variation across the country. Some areas that have a higher life expectancy and lower, and then kind of in the middle. So first, we'll talk about areas of the country that have higher life expectancies. Those are going to be up in the Northeast, Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut. These are some of the wealthier states. These states will have more developed healthcare systems or more support for healthcare or housing overall. And then next would be the West Coast. So California, Oregon, and Washington also tend to have higher life expectancies. There's also a culture there with a larger focus on healthy living, outdoor activities, fresh foods, and more money in those areas and other parts of the country. Then you look at the Midwest, they're actually close to the national average. So they're right in the middle, both literally and figuratively, of life expectancy. And then last but not least, or maybe least in terms of life expectancy, you have the South. So that's Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, also commonly associated with the stroke belt. So a high number of strokes in that area. And just in general, rural versus urban. So you can look at any given state and look at rural versus urban. And a lot of the factors we've talked about, access to healthcare, resources, those types of things, then rural life expectancies, especially in areas of higher poverty, are more limited than in urban areas. So when you're thinking globally about anybody's given life expectancy, there are a lot of factors. But when I think about it, I have always had this idea that when I hit whatever my life expectancy is, like that would be it. Like you should have this huge party. And as both of my parents are approaching life expectancy and my in-laws are at or very closely getting to life expectancy, I guess I just have in my head that we would just like go out to dinner and get some balloons and be like, all right, that everything after this is just cherries on top, right? Like this is just where we're supposed to be. Like you stop worrying about stuff. I don't know. I'm probably the only person that thinks that, but I've always had this in my head. Well, you know, 76 is what maybe you had coming out of the gate, and now you're at 76, and I think we should be super happy with everything that comes after this. And I don't know. That's kind of a silly perspective, but I think about this in terms of goals. Think about this in terms of connection. And why should a goal change after you pass your life expectancy? I'm not really sure, but I do think it's something to keep in mind. In fact, there are people, we just lost a very prominent leader in our healthcare community. And I was thinking, I was reading the obituary and he passed away still working an incredibly stressful job and challenging job at the age of 77. And it just took me aback. One, I didn't realize he was 77. And then two, I thought, he's past his life expectancy and he's still working this crazy, probably 60 or 80 hour a week job, but he's very dedicated to this. So I have no judgment at all as to how people end up spending those years. But I've always thought those years need to be absolutely in my life, optimized and maximized towards my highest quality of life and my highest amount of connection with the people and things that I like to connect with. So when I have any person that is looking, taking care of an aging parent, one of the first things I always talk about is just the age. Like, what's the age difference? And like we've talked about, I've got many people that are in their 60s taking care of parents in their 80s that have sometimes gone well beyond life expectancy. And so when you're trying to do some planning, these can be just some helpful things to think about. You can look at your familial life expectancy. So same gendered people within your own family, if you know of them or what their health conditions were. So women and families that tend to live into their 90s, generation after generation, you know, there's a strong genetic component to that. Or, you know, if there's a streak of people dying very early, then that could be something to think about. And I'm not saying as a fateful thing, like, well, this is the way it's going to go. But just in general, for planning purposes, and maybe I'm just being too dry about this, but I just think, what is a normal average thing to think about here? And so you kind of have those two points now, right? So males 76, females 81, and that's expected to increase every decade that goes by. And I think possibly be grossly disrupted, meaning like if there's some technological revolution within medicine and we can start solving some of these major issues that limit life expectancy, that perhaps you can see people living longer and longer. Now, I will tell you, there's an extreme version of this. And I was listening to a podcast and they were interviewing an author of a movement. And I'm sorry, I don't even have his name off the top of my head, but the whole movement was called Don't Die. And it's a group of people who are dedicated to optimizing every single aspect of their life, like over 200 different facets of life, thinking that AI might actually extend human life well beyond our wildest imagination, well beyond 120 years old, and that now is the time to start thinking about it. And at first, I thought it was totally ridiculous. And I thought, why am I even listening to this? And then the longer I thought about it, is, you know, we are probably at a point technologically and medicine wise that it's probably not crazy to think that we will live much longer. Now, I'm not proposing over 120 years old. I'm just saying much longer than you think about your own great grandparents or your own grandparents. And perhaps we might want to adjust the way that we're thinking, the way that we're planning, the way that we're designing to think of ourselves in the future as having much more support medically than we do even right now, like things we can't even think about or imagine. Like if you were around 50 years ago and you handed somebody a cell phone, they'd be like, I have no idea what this is. And so it's a totally different world. And let's not even hand them a cell phone. Let's hand them an iPhone 15 Pro and really blow their minds. And they'll really have no idea what that is 50 years ago. But of course, it's just part of your day-to-day life right now. Maybe not the iPhone 15 Pro, but you know, some sort of smartphone in your life. And so just kind of opening my mind up to that, that's probably why I ended up doing this podcast, because I was thinking about, well, that's extreme, right? You can try to mitigate and control your own lifespan, but that's one way to do it. But in general, just to get together with the amount of resources it might take to support ourselves if we end up living that long, what kind of space do we have to end up living that long? And then if we more acutely in the more short term have aging parents that are getting up well over life expectancy into their 80s, 90s, or even 100, understanding like what that looks like, how can we mitigate some of these limitations to life expectancy? And so part of that, let's just talk about some of the things we can control. So one of the big ones is just social connection. We could talk about vital signs and cholesterol and blood pressure, blah, blah, whatever. That's boring. But you can't control all of that necessarily. But keeping people, especially seniors, engaged in as many ways as possible that they're willing to do, even if that has to be adapted or adjusted over time, is what can promote longer life expectancies. Having beautiful scenery, having beautiful things around them, not necessarily even through a window, but people, art, music, things that bring joy, things that bring meaning to somebody, can be another way to help promote life expectancy. So we can get very medicalizing for all of these different areas. And again, try to go back and micromanage the right dose for the right medication and micromanage attending doctor's appointments, which is important, but not to miss the forest for the trees. When we're looking at that meaningful life, especially going well past your life expectancy, that a lot of this comes down to basic connection with their family, connection with their community, connection with their past, if that's important to them, and continuing to connect with things that bring them quality of life, bring them joy. So that can be anything from music, art, events, conversations, updates. And I was thinking about this the other day, but there's so much talk about the pros and cons of things like Facebook. But I will tell you, living with my grandmother here, Facebook is her absolute lifeline to know pretty much anything about anybody that's happening. And that's just one example of what social media, one of the positive aspects of social media is for her, somebody who can't necessarily talk to all, I think she has, oh my God, 34 great-grandchildren, something like that at any given time, but she can see posts on Facebook and she can feel like she's a part of their life. She can get updates. She can comment. She can like. She can do those types of things. So it's a minor example, but just the connection alone of feeling like you're still part of something, like you're up to date, that you're informed, that you're participating, can be protective of quality of life and length of life as well. So anyway, that was a super fast one. That is my two cents about life expectancy. I'd love to hear what you think. I'd love to hear what kind of party you would have when you meet your own life expectancy, if you know what it is. What I'm worried about is I'm going to plan a huge party and then life expectancy is going to change. So I'm going to plan it for, like, say I'm 85. And then at, like, going into the party, then like the updated statistics will come out and they'll say, actually, somebody your age is going to live to be 87. And then I'll have to cancel the party. So things I worry about. Anyway, I appreciate you listening. I know this was kind of a weird topic, but wanted to put that out there. And if you have any comments, again, please still reach out to me. story@RebeccaTapiaMD.com is my email address. And I will talk to you next week.
Hey everyone, it's Rebecca. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'd like to take just a moment to review the disclaimer. This podcast is for informational and occasional entertainment purposes only. Nothing discussed here is formal medical, legal, or financial advice. By listening to the podcast, we are not creating a patient-doctor relationship between you and myself or any of the guests. Really, it's just me and a possible guest or two, sometimes three, sitting around talking about difficult topics related to aging parents. If you have or suspect that you might have a medical problem or condition, you should seek advice from a licensed medical professional. If you have any questions or concerns, please read the full disclaimer in the show notes or contact me directly. Thank you again for joining us today. I can't wait to see you next week. Have a good day.